Orson Welles again, come to call for another Sunday visit. Ladies and gentlemen, our fighting men coming back to us aren't getting the breaks they deserve. The war criminals are getting all the breaks they deserve. And then some. I'll tell you about it in just a minute.
Just a word about the sponsor of this program, Lear Incorporated. Lear, that's spelled L-E-A-R, builds fine radios. Although Lear radios have been made since 1930, up to now they've been for a very special use. They've been aircraft radios. Radios made as perfect as radio science could make them. Now, Lear is making home radios as well. And these, too, are made with the advanced engineering and conscientious craftsmanship that have become typical of Lear manufacture. One of the brand new developments you find in Lear home radios is the Lear wire that remembers. It's a simple way of making lasting recordings of your children's voices, your family songs, the talents of your friends. Or you can take programs right off the air, record them, and hear them again and again thousands and thousands of times. It's done by a spool of hair-sized wire that glides over a magnet and picks up every note, tone, and inflection. The recording can be just a few words or hours long. And anything you don't want to keep can be erased simply by recording something else over it. You've never seen a recording like this before. It's something you'll want in your radio. You get it in Lear radios. Now, Mr. Welles brings you his views and opinions on events as he sees them. His opinions are his own and do not necessarily represent the views of Lear Incorporated.
That great and greatly hopeful conception, the United Nations, is in business again. That's the best news of the week. The efficient cooperation behind the war criminal trials starting in Nuremberg is in stark and cheerful contrast to the last conference in London. Four prosecutors, American Supreme Court Justice Jackson, British Chief Prosecutor Chocris, Russia's Rudenko, and the French legalist de Montan are building a code that will be binding above and beyond the ties of country. Quietly, carefully, since last June, they've been preparing a momentous 20,000-word indictment presented this week against 24 top Nazi war criminals. In all truth, it's more than an indictment. It's a brave step in the direction of a law-abiding world community. These men have been exploring and mapping a new realm of law, new in that it specifically rules out the defenses accepted in the old so-called international law. From now on, leaders are responsible for all individual actions under them. Being one of the rulers of a state is no defense, nor is acting on orders a defense. And this is important. If an individual or group is found guilty, the whole group can be found guilty through him. Two of the men on trial are Arthur Seisinkart and Ernest Kaltenbrunner. Both were SS men of high rank. If they are convicted and the court also finds the Austrian SS guilty, each nation can try the small fry in its own court, where the only proof needed would be that of membership in the guilty organization. This will speed up all the trials, but don't expect this first one to go too quickly. Although the court can review evidence before it's submitted so that the defendants can't bring in extraneous material to take up time and becloud the issue, and also perhaps prevent embarrassment to some Allied leaders who might be connected with the appeasement of the 30s and the encouragement of Germany's plan for aggressive war in the East. If we're ever to have international police force, there must be international law, real law, not a set of conventions. So watch the lawmakers, the lawyers, and the judges in Nuremberg. The cause of peace and all our hopes for a free, abundant world depend on those trials. They may be a cornerstone for world democracy, may make it possible for us to go on being fruitful and multiplying and replenishing the earth in the same universe with the atomic bomb. Well, things are looking just a little bit better this week for the GI Bill of Rights. GI Bill of Rights. It sounds good, doesn't it? As though it's settled everything. Well, it does not. The bill is supposed to provide a discharged veteran with $4,000 for the purchase of a home, a small farm, or a small business. But if a vet can't furnish collateral for the other half or can't provide endorsers satisfactory to the bank, he's just out of luck. You can thank a nice little lobby, the loan company's lobby, for that one. As first proposed, the GI Bill of Rights would have authorized loans directly by the government. But the money lenders fought for private loans at 6%, and they won a compromise with all the weight in their favor. It's 4% now. It's private loans. It shouldn't be, but it is. Despite the provisions of the Social Security law, some veterans are not getting their jobs back, and for education, more money is needed desperately. The unemployment provision allows for $20 a week up to 52 weeks any time in 2 years, but a vet is not qualified for this If he leaves suitable employment voluntarily, if he's fired for his conduct, or if he fails to accept suitable employment offered by the U.S. Employment Service, or, and look out for this one, it's a great big juicy anti-labor joker. If work stoppage is due to labor disputes, unless the veteran is not participating or interested in the dispute, you can see what that adds up to. An awful lot of servicemen are union men. I don't think they'll go for that one. The news from Washington is encouraging. This week, Senator George's Finance Committee has been holding public hearings on the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1945, as passed by the House of Representatives. Amendments, which will probably pass the Senate, answer many general criticisms of the GI Bill of Rights. The educational provisions are liberalized. The subsistence allowance for students has been raised. The new bill will permit loans at reasonable value as determined by the lender's appraisal. Vets will still probably get rooked because prices are inflated and bankers may encourage loans for almost any purpose because there's so much money around. What does it add up to? As it stands now, how does the GI Bill meet the veterans' needs and wants? I'll try to tell you. The war is won. The oceans are filled with ships bringing veterans, victorious warriors back to America. Transport docks in the East River and soldiers pour down the gangplank. Where are you going, soldier? Home, he says. I'm a plumber. I've got a wife and two kids in Kansas City. I've got a business. Wife's been carrying on. Well, he's okay. As it stands now, the GI Bill is okay for him. Let's try the next man. Where are you going, soldier? Wilkesboro. That's where I come from. I was a coal miner, but don't get me wrong. I don't want my old job back. I'm a mechanic now. A skilled mechanic. No more of the pits for me. I want a better job. I can handle it. Sure he can. He's learned a lot of soldiering, and he wants to use what he's learned to make things better for himself and his folks. But here at home, the war industries have trained a lot of skilled mechanics, too. A tremendous lot of them. They've got jobs now. Will room be made for this returning GI? Or is he going to have to go back to the coal pits in order to live? Here comes another veteran. Veteran sounds like an old man, but this one's a little more than a boy. Where are you going, soldier? Me? I'm going back to school. I hope I am. I can't be sure, but I don't know whether I'll be able to afford it. The government's promised me $50 a month while I'm in college, but I'm not sure whether I can make out on that. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm grateful, but I'm doubtful, too. Of course, our young veteran has his doubts. He has his reasons, good reasons. It costs a lot to eat and sleep these days. He'll need a part-time job to swing it, and there are boys and girls just leaving high school for universities who'll need a job. Unless we're mobilized for peace, a lot of these kids and a lot of veterans of the same age are going to be competing for the same jobs. That question's tough. We're going to have to answer it pretty soon. And look, here comes another fella. We're going to have to think about him, too. Where are you going, soldier? You're asking me. As if I knew you were asking me. What do you think I've been asking myself these last 2 years in Africa and then in Italy and then in France and in Germany? I don't know where I'm going. So I can't tell you. I just don't know. We ask him if he didn't make some sort of plan. Listen, he says. When you get as close to as many bullets as I did, you think of tomorrow in a different sort of way. Like there isn't any tomorrow. He'll need help, too. He'll need lots of help. He shouldn't have to get it by selling apples on street corners. Here comes another down the gangplank back home after the war, and another. Where are you going, soldier? We're going to ask that question 1,000,000 times. 10,000,000 times. And we'll get 10,000,000 answers. In Army and Navy camps all over the country where I've had the privilege of entertaining servicemen and women, they've shot questions at me, questions that hit dead center. Those men and women aren't asking each other, where are you going? They're asking us, where we'll be, now that they're coming back. And the GI Bill, it turns out, just isn't good enough as an answer. It's only a stopgap. Our best laws only partially cover conditions as we see them now. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a big job ahead of us. 12,000,000 men are marching home. Let's not ask, where are you going, soldier? Let's be ready for them, so all we need to say to them is just hello. Just hello. And if a soldier wants anything more from us by way of conversation, let's be able to say, look at the map, brother. From New York State to the state of Washington, from the mountains of California to the Everglades, this is your land. And more than ever, it's the land of opportunity. Take the map home and study it. Pick the road you want to travel, and, brother, Here's your ticket and a fare to see you through. All the way. Well, I have a story for you I'd like to tell in just a minute before saying goodbye. But first, an important announcement.
For just a moment, let me tell you a little more about Lear radios. For more than 15 years, only aviators got them. But now you can have one for your home. And like Lear aircraft radios, Lear home radios are made with unusual care, craftsmanship, and keen appreciation of what lies ahead. For example, you'll find in the beautiful Lear console sets an entirely new contribution to your convenience in adjusting the programs to your liking. You'll find some with television, some with high-fidelity FM, with world-girdling shortwave. And some will have the Lear wire recorder I told you about before and that you've read about in the ads. With all their new features, Lear radios are right along in price with sets that offer far less. At the top of the line, there's a handsome console with television, the wire recorder, and the finest of everything. It sells for about $500. And a neat, capable table model sells at the $19.95 level. Well, before the holidays, you'll be able to go to your Lear dealer and hear these Lear radios yourself. Then you'll see exactly how really fine they are. We know you're going to agree that you get the most value for your investment in the radio with a nameplate L-E-A-R, the Lear radio. And now a few words about next week.
Well, the war is really over in Hollywood, not the labor war. That isn't over by a long shot. I mean the social dimout, the Saturday night sobriety that marked the years of that shooting war, which was so very, very, very far away from Hollywood and Vine. Mike Romanoff tells me he's giving a masked ball where all the guests will be required to come in costume of their ancestors, which for a Hollywood party seems a pretty daring idea. And last night, Elsa Maxwell, without reference to a single worthy cause beyond the pleasant purpose of hospitality, threw a shindig of old-time lavishness in Mike's saloon. The chief event was a cooking contest, and among those entered were Clark Gable, Joe Cotton, Sonia Heine, Van Johnston, and Claudette Colbert. And on the word go, they all started cooking on little stoves provided for the game. And on the word stop, the results were handed over to the judges, Jack Warner, Daryl Zanuck, L.B. Mayer, and David Selznick. I don't know what the judges had to say about those results, but you can take my word for it that nothing ever tasted or smelt so awful since the world began. I don't know who won, but I can report that before entering the contest, Joan Fontaine, who's been having one of the more serious disagreements with her producer, made the following official statement. I'll cook it if David Selznick will eat it. We left early, not because Elsa's journalistic career has in any way reduced her talents as a party thrower, but because I rather hoped to get to the strike meeting, a rival event last night. We didn't make it, but I'll tell you about that strike next week. Would like to tell you a story. Pat O'Brien told me this one. Seems he was taking his son back to military school after a weekend at home. And on the way, they passed that big veterans hospital out at Sawtelle and miles of crosses in the soldiers' cemetery. Crosses look like they're standing at attention. Rest in peace, the saying goes, but somehow you can't believe that in those blank battalions, the order will ever be heard at ease. They were burying another hero that Monday morning, and as Pat and his little boy drove by, they heard the volley being fired over the grave. Were all those soldiers? Pat's little son wanted to know, looking out over the standardized infinity of tombstones. Pat said yes, they were all soldiers, the men buried there. Were they once little boys like me? Yes, they were little boys, just like you. Pat's little son thought that one over for a minute. Then they weren't born soldiers, he asked, and Pat said no, and they drove on for a while in silence. They all died for their country? Yes. They weren't very old, were they? No, they weren't. My, there were a lot of them had to die. You know what, Daddy? Said Pat's little son. I think God was just wasting his time. Well, next week I'll have another story for you, a ghost story, if you don't mind. Till then, my sponsors, the makers of Lear Radio, and I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.